Friends, the title of our lecture this evening is Path of Discipleship. As the first speaker pointed out, this is by way of preparing our hearts and minds for the great day that is approaching us, namely the Judge Day, the vernal equinox, the day on which Mr. William Kwan Judge, our guru and teacher, laid aside his mortal coil after working unselfishly for Theosophy, the Masters and HVP for nearly 21 years. He died at a very young age of 45, was born in 1851 and died in 1896, a few years after the death of HVP. He was an ardent disciple of HVP and the Masters, and HVP often called him as her alter ego, her true friend, only true friend. He was responsible for the spread of the Theosophical Society in entire America. And then he was so devoted to Theosophy and HVP that the first time he saw her, met her in 1874, he felt as if he was seeing her earlier. And he was speaking in terms of guru, disciple relationship, that he was taking up the thread of the unfinished work of the last incarnation. Such was his devotion to HVP and the Masters, with the result that he promulgated Theosophy as was recorded in the writings of HVP and the Masters. The only difference being, while HVP's writings were mostly metaphysical, appealing to the mind of man, or the intellect of man, his teachings were very simple and absolutely practical in the application of genuine Theosophy. But of his earnest effort for 21 years, right from the time he met the Free Blavatsky, we wouldn't be having genuine Theosophy today. Of course, I mean, we should belittle the work of Robert Crossman who came later. Therefore, from that point of view, he is our guru and teacher. And he passed away on the vernal equinox day, the 21st of March, and unfortunately, we don't have a meeting on that particular day. Therefore, we are going to observe the anniversary of Judge. I mean, we call it Judge Day. On the next Sunday, as is announced. And then it will be devotional meeting. There will be devotion, four readings, devotional teachings. And we have brought out a special leaflet announcing the celebration or the observation of the anniversary day. Please take a few copies with you so that a person who has a spark of the Tathagata light in him may be rekindled to renew his contact with Theosophy. This is very important indeed. We don't know where nook and corner people are waiting to hear back and come back to Theosophy. Now, obviously, we are turning our attention to one of the most inspiring subjects, the path of Kailash. He was called one of the victorious disciples. There were two. Besides him, there was Damodar K. Mavlankar, who was also declared as a very successful chela. Of the hundreds of chelas who came, only two were successful. And Mr. Judge was called as a great exile, greatest of exile. Exile between from the land of the immortals, the land of mortals. He came specifically here to give out the same old teaching of Brahmavidya along with HVP. Therefore, we will become taking up the subject of path of discipleship. The path of discipleship, let's say first and foremost, is not a bed of roses. Certainly, it's full of thorns, beans, and we should cut out all the weeds and thorns in one stroke. It's not possible. In fact, the path of discipleship. Therefore, every trial and test that the disciple has to undergo, see, it's only directed towards his internal mind. Because the other day, HVB pointed out somewhere else that chelaship is to do with the internal attitude of mind. We'll come to that little later. Therefore, from that point of view, the most inspiring teaching, he said, in what sense? HVP has given out so much of teachings about cosmogony and anthropology. And the most inspiring teaching of all this, and the most important aspect of a teaching, is her proclamation of the masters being living factories. At one time she proclaimed that masters are existing facts, living facts, not simply ideas. This is important for us to understand. And therefore she said they call them Mahatmas, great soul. That is, those people who have transformed themselves by their inner training and subjugation of our lower self, by herself, and perfected all the departments of the nature and priorities of evolution. Great beings, they had transformed tamatic beings into mahatmic beings and become great. And having perfected themselves in all departments of nature, like physical, psychical, the intellectual, the moral and spiritual, gone up higher up in the ladder of evolution. Maybe we reach that particular state one day, if only we follow their path by our own self-induced and self-devised methods. It's important. There is no help anyway on the way. We have to do, as the third fundamental points out, once you reach the stage of man, it is up to man who takes evolution in his own hands. Now, see, this particular aspect of evolution is important. What exactly is evolution? In fact, you see, before going to that, we'll just mention one more thing. In fact, H.V. mentioned this simple thing in the very first volume of first monumental work, Ajisalvini. On the very first chapter, in the very first chapter, she says, she along with her friends went round the globe in search of what? Who to know who, what, and where is God. And she met some of the great exalted beings in the East who could answer any problem, just like solving Euclid problem. And they said, you see, look here, yes, it's man's spirit produced God's spirit. In other words, man is a microcosm of the great macrocosm. You see, he actually mirrors the entire macrocosm. From that point of view, if you want to know more God, about God, if you know, when you know yourself, you know the God. There itself she pointed out the existence of masters. Then in the last book, her last book, The Voice of the Sirens, this a few precepts of or the golden precepts of chosen fragments from the book of golden precepts, dedicated to few, the Lanushravakas, to disciples. This book is mainly intended, of course, to other people also, mainly intended, see how a student of theosophy and aspirant to path of scholarship can proceed along the right lines, the path of scholarship. And now, when she said, talked about the master, she said, she called them lords of light, lords of wisdom and compassion, lords of sacrifice, lords of not only sacrifice, the masters of wisdom and compassion, who showed the path of renunciation. Then she said, when she said, yes, the masters exist as a fact in nature, she also said, the path they follow is having renounced the results of nirvana, or bliss of nirvana. They remain behind in the entire atmosphere, people in the current in space, with one will, one heart, one mind. What is that? To draw the developing intelligence of the race to consider the destinies of human soul. Just in one work, the masters are compassionate. They are so compassionate, looking after the entire humanity. And she said, once she posited this, she said, there is also a path leading to them. That's the path of realization. Therefore, and in 1888, she openly announced there are three sections in TS, this of society. The external TS, made of all kinds of members and all that. And the second section, comprising of chelas and late chelas. And the third section, that of great masters of compassion. And therefore, from that point of view, she wanted to bring about a fusion among the people who can qualify for chelas. And they can know the importance of the inner evolution of man. In fact, in one place it will be pointed out in the Sikh doctrine that the fundamental tenet of the occult philosophy, the esoteric philosophy, is the importance that they lay upon the evolution of inner spiritual man, immortal man. This is important for us. Physical evolution apart, the inner immortal man, spiritual evolution, is very, very important. For that we have to understand there is one life principle which functions independent of any matter, which functions throughout the universe, and the various vehicles, the hierarchies of being, intelligent beings, are its vehicle. It not only governs the entire law of evolution, but human beings also. Therefore, how does this law, the one's consciousness or one life, evolve throughout the universe? Yes, it's a continuous process of unfolding. This consciousness becomes a self-aware, or awareness of that consciousness comes when it reaches the human state, when he becomes self-conscious. But a man at that point in time, taking the evolution in his own hands, can so use his creative will and subjugate his lower self and personality and his entire carnal nature by purifying himself inwardly and morally, by controlling through his higher self the lower self. He can transcend all the limitations of lower self, become a Mahatma. Self-conscious being. Such are the great exalted ones who, having reached the highest peak of enlightenment, renounce the Nirvana to be with you and me, to help mankind. And these two great people, see, these great people who talk about the emancipation of soul through the path of fearless. And therefore, HPP says in one place, yes, she says, it is in your handout. One of the prime objects of HPP's mission was to open up communication between the world of man and that of the masters, and to create a suitable embassy in the former domain through which the work of the Lord could be carried on. That is why she announced the three sectionalities of the society in 1888. The moment she announced, hundreds of people applied, without knowing the dangers involved, without preparing themselves how to become a chela. Now, as we said earlier, it could be in one place, she points out, chelaship has to do with the inner and internal attitude of mind. The incarnated mind, unfortunately, it has got two, actually, this is the problem. And then what does the mind do? It is where we have our thoughts and feelings. Therefore, thoughts and feelings are more important than the external act. You might be surprised. Although, if we don't cheat ourselves, then what happens is our inner perception or the knowledge that we derive from the thoughts and feelings that we have, you see, to conduct ourselves along with other people, you see, will depend, conform to the thoughts and feelings that we have, or the knowledge regarding deity, nature and man. If we think that we are separate beings, our inner perception will also be clouded. In fact, the fogs created by us, which cannot be removed, unless something happens to shine in our brains. Therefore, it is we who have created all these thoughts, clouded our mind with all these separate dependencies. Therefore, the first and foremost task of a disciple is to acquire right knowledge, not only right knowledge with regard to deity, nature and man, but also right sadhana, discipline, practice right sadhana, which will enable us to purify our inner perception, to understand the real nature of things. What is man? What are the surroundings? Are we different from the environment? All these things will enable us. Then, as the reading that we have today, each soul can become a string of the soul echoing Veena and actually echo the soul song of the higher mass, illuminated by Atma Buddhi. This is the whole idea of sadhana. Ultimate aim of this discipleship is to reach that stage only, where we become intuitively able to perceive that the vehicle of this is the vehicle of Avalokiteshvara. Do we realize that? But without knowing that, we enter into this path of disciples. And then there are lots of obstacles, which are not created by anyone else. It's our own creation. You see, during the Friday class for the past several weeks, we have been considering the the work of elementals. This has to be an elemental only. See here. This also, I don't know whether you have a handout. It may be there, yes. You see, this is from where what are the implements? You see, what happens is, here, the mind has to be controlled from its usual moorings of personality, sensual living and all that. Therefore, it says, what are the obstacles? The obstacles in the way of him who desires to attain concentration are sickness, languor, doubt, carelessness, laziness, addiction to objects of sense. Most of us are. Erroneous perception. Because we think what we see is real. Failure to attain any stage of abstraction. An instability in any state when attained. That means you are not very steady in your mind. There is no calmness also. Then it explains here, it's not bad. These obstacles are accompanied by grief, distress, trembling and sighing. Therefore worry also. But this can be overcome by Maitri Karuna, that is benevolence, practice, tenderness, complacency, etc., etc. But these are, think about it, sickness. Why there is sickness? What has happened? Because we think we are ourselves separate from the whole unit. See, look, take a simple example. See, when you cut the finger, does it pain only here? The whole body politic is hurt completely. You can't do anything. You'll be thinking, your mind will be thinking about the whole nervous system involved also. See, this is one single part in this body politic affects the entire whole. But are we not like a cog in the machinery? Machine, one machine of humanity. Whatever we feel, I mean lonely, I mean the sense of, I mean, bad, doing bad karma, bad thoughts, we are going to pull down the entire humanity. No man can sin alone, not suffer the consequences of sin alone. Because we are pulling down the entire humanity. Because we are not alone. We are all, yes, units in the great machine. If we don't work in unison the entire humanity, there is something happens to humanity. This is the whole problem, we don't realize that. But this sickness is, because of sickness, how does it get in? This tendency of separateness creates psychic impulses to various cells in the body. There is an imbalance taking place. With that imbalance, yes, there is a war among the cells. A constant war going on. With the result, yes, we fall in. This is. You are not disease. Therefore, you see, this is created by what? The tendency that we have been thinking all the time, therefore attaching ourselves to the various elementals which form, which are so concrete, which come back to you. Not only come back to you, from like-minded people, you see, due to the law of consubstantiality, we are attracted to most. From others who think likewise. Sorry. Likewise, you see, then the other thing is, laziness, okay. Languor. This is also what happened. You don't want to get up in the morning at 6 o'clock. The office, we have to go to the office at 9. Unfortunately, student has been a victim also. People get up at 7:30. Within half an hour, they do everything. And then if the food is not ready, you shout at your wife and run to the office. This habit form. This tendency we have created over and over again doing it for several times. With the result that it has become, it's melted in our fabric. It's become our second nature. This is the problem with the elementals. We don't realize that. With the result what happens is when you try to break that, it's impossible. Next impossible. it's extremely difficult to overcome all that. Then the result will be you get angry with somebody or something else happens. This is the problem, you see. Sorry. Then doubt. Doubt, says Master, is one of the worst things, cancerous growth. Now, there are so many things in doubt. Doubt in your ability to walk the path. Then doubt will turn little later, doubt in the teachings itself. Then doubt in your self-confidence, confidence will go down. Once you doubt the teachings, then you will doubt the very existence of masters. It has no boundary. It goes on. All the time worrying your mind, you see, your mind is never at rest if you have doubt or suspicion. You see, that's why Master says cancer is growth. You have to be very careful about doubt. This also is over the past. We have created tendencies which come again and again. A simple example. Sorry. See, what happens is, if this doubt comes in again, what happens is, this is the tendency we are creating. Supposing you take a vow today, Pritya, from today I am not going to tell any time. Like, this simple thing. Then what happens immediately? You are opening a aperture into a small hole. Small aperture which allowed only a ray of light into a big one, just like a window. You have opened the window, unfortunately. Then all kinds of earlier elementals which were opposed to you, which you associated with you, precipitate themselves and see that you don't. You break the very same leaf, whatever you are. This is what happens. When you want to turn your leaf into a new life, try to turn yourself to the higher parent within you, the spiritual, then it becomes very difficult. Therefore, I can go on talking about all this in the same way, but the time is short, unfortunately. Therefore, you see what happens. All these are our own creation. This is the problem. Therefore, it's the moment we try to become the spiritual or try to live a spiritual life, so many obstacles come. A creation of ourselves which become the evil tendencies, not only of your but the entire race. Therefore, see, Srimati points out, I think it's there, the second quotation in your handout. To offer oneself as a candidate for chairmanship is easy enough. To develop into an adept, the most difficult task any man could possibly undertake. They don't have the difficulties. Therefore, to overcome all these things, and then certain sadhana disciplines have to undertake. Before you are admitted as a probationary stage even, she points out there are certain rules which have to be followed. There are 7 qualifications for chairmanship. It's not there in your handout. We will briefly enumerate them, it's not everyone. Because the subject is so vast that we can't even finish it in 4 hours. If we ask, perfect physical. Suppose you have a sick body, can a sound mind work in that sick body? My spirit is willing, flesh is weak. See, the whole problem is, unless we have a sound body, sound mind cannot work. Therefore, the absolute necessity of keeping good health. This is very important. Although, in certain exceptional cases, it is not insisted upon. In fact, Damodar Mavlankar had a very frail body. That is true. One thing he had, poor man. Then, we did mention about how the ill health comes in the physical body due to imbalance in the cells and all that, due to various impulses that we give to the various cells in the body. Absolute mental and physical purity. This is important. See, when our body is not clean, all sweat, smell and all that. See, we can use a beautiful soap, like Lux toilet soap or sandalwood soap or anything and clean it. But how are you going to clean your impure mental, psychic nature? Unfortunately, there is no, you see, soap invented so far by the scientists. Then you see, we have to know the mechanism how it works. The astral body is truth, a model and which the physical is prepared. But astral itself is a vehicle of pranic current. But pranic current itself is a vehicle of karma. But unfortunately, karma influences all the time its immediate neighbor. It's manas, incarnated manas. Therefore, depending upon the nature of thoughts manas engenders, your psychic nature will be pure, impure or pure. See, this, because it's influenced by karma, the lower tendencies of selfishness, personality, sensuous living and all that, we are giving all the time what kind of impulse to your thoughts, to your various selves in the body? Psychic impulse. If you have, give psychic impulse as opposed to noetic impulse, what happens is due to the lower kind of thought generated. Then what happens is the pranic current flowing through it, you see, becomes impure. With the result, the psychic, the magnetism is absolutely impure. Why do you find some people so obnoxious? Well, even before they could come near you, some kind of magnetism throws you out. This has to be, due to this psychic impurity. In fact, the great spiritualism and all that, in the sense, real spiritualists who observe various spiritual observances, they never touch anybody. They don't even touch the vessels touched by other people. Because they want to keep retain that matter so pure. There are various rules indicated for chelas and all that. See, therefore, absolute mental physical purity means that you should have such kind of noetic impulses which can come from higher mind only. Why? You see, all the time thinking about the philosophical ideas and then the spiritual themes, which can alone give us noetic impulse to the various organs and cells in the body. With the result, then the second. Therefore, you have to purify ultimately the thoughts again. Then comes unselfishness of purpose. It is very, very important. Universal charity, pity to all the animate things. This, unless your motive is pure. What for you have come to sit for development here, to walk to the path of fellowship? Is it a selfish motive? Or is there the motive to be of service to humanity? Are you able to see that you are here only to serve humanity? To live to benefit mankind is the first step. To practice the glorious virtues is the second. But our goal, you see, concept and motive should be to serve humanity. What is that? Then it goes on. You see that, you see, this absolute faithful law in the, faith in the law of karma, whose course cannot be caused to deviate, etc., etc. There are other things also. Let's leave that. Now, see, most of us, what happens is, see, we think we are all perfect beings. We don't think that we are afraid of anything, or normally we say we don't tell lies at all, or we can overcome this sin or that vice or this such. Plainly, when you are tested, you say our motive is pure. Will we allow the master to see the things in our mind? Will our motive be pure? I'm not sure. Then what happens in the road? We think we are honest people. You see 1,000 rupee bundle there in the road, what do? You do take the pains, you take them, go to the nearest, find out the address of the person who lost it, give it to him, or try to see here and there and pocket. You'll be tempted. All the time in life, by all these petty things, we are all the time tempted. Most of the time we fall a victim. That is why here it says, this also part of it is in your handout. It says here, no man or woman knows his or her moral strength unless it is tried. We don't know whether we can stand the trial.
Thousands go through life very respectfully because they were never put to the test. This is a truism, doubtless. Then I think it is there in your hand. One who undertakes to try for scholarship, by that very act, rouses and lashes to desperation every sleeping passion of his animal nature. Who has created all this? He himself, through his association with elementals, all those earlier incarnations, life after life. We impress it so badly, so strongly, that we cannot get out. It becomes part and parcel of our nature. You see, for this is commencement of a struggle of mastery in which quarter is neither to be given nor taken. It is once for all, to be or not to be. To conquer means adoption. To fail an ignoble martyrdom, or to fall a victim to lust, pride, avarice, vanity, selfishness, cowardice, or any other of the lower propensities, is indeed ignoble if measured by the standard of true man. Look at this. We can fall a victim to any one of them. If you are able to conquer lust, we may fall a victim to vanity, to vaingloriousness, or pride. So many things are there. All these things are creation of ourselves. Therefore, these have to be conquered one by one. Every trial and test that we conquer is one step towards the goal. Higher up. Then, this is also there. Scholarship was defined the other day by a Mahatma as a psychic resolvent, which keeps away all dross and leaves only the pure gold behind. This is what we have to make of our nature. The karma, the karmic manas, has to be transformed, transmuted, alchemized into gold. In the sense, yes, it is a transformed, transmuted, alchemized into karma, buddhi manas. But how do you do it? Therefore, when you melt gold, what happens? All the dross and crude things come up, which can be removed. Then pure gold is left. That is what is our inner nature. If you realize that, if our inner nature is a pure gold, covered over by dust, ashes, all kinds of vanity, external things. This is then we have made this tabernacle where it's a temple of the living God. We have made it a den of thieves. This is what Jesus said. We have made this temple in a den of thieves. Money changers of Jerusalem are sitting there. Where is the bargaining wonderful? Yes, that's in the material level. But how are you going to convert all Jesus? Mr. Judge says in one place, beautiful. He says it is possible to control and conquer this by always dwelling upon spiritual things and the philosophic ideas. It is possible for us to make our physical brain porous, higher spiritual influences. We only saw in yesterday's class that by dwelling on the thing to be realized, we can realize that. Now he says, dwelling on these, yes, philosophic ideas, noble philosophic ideas, and spiritual things. We can make our brains porous. That means, is he talking about only physical brain? It is for us important to recognize that. See, there are millions of cells in our body, 33 crores of cells, lives. Each one has its own memory, intelligence. Therefore, what kind of impulse are we going to give to all these cells? Psychic annoying. See, if you give psychic impulse, naturally we will never get far. We'll be drowned in the animal level only. We can never, never know what is spirituality. The moment we are able to give this annoying impulse to each and every cell in our body, what happens? Then we will be making this whole body into a consecrate this body. It can become a living temple where a living God exists.
When we have that kind of a thing, yes, we will be able to intuitively perceive that Avalokiteshvara is the equivalent of that Avalokiteshvara. One of the qualifications. To realize that. This is a temple where deity resides. The innermost sanctum sanctorum of our heart, the hound of heaven, the dark chamber, king of the dark chamber is here. We are looking, outside, searching all the time. But in all this process, one thing we should never forget, that you see, time is going to be short. You see, the reading that we had today talks about two things. Not only we should, yes, thrill in response to everything that happens, but we have to work in relation with all the four disciples. The attitude of mind and heart to that one master. This is very important. In fact, in one place, I don't have the quotation here, the master says, a band of esoteric students must work in unison, and what, you see, makes a happy, we should also become happy. Can anybody do it then? How many of us can do that? Excepting if it happens to be your own kith and kin. If somebody is very happy, that fellow is happy, I'm not very happy. We're all at them jealous. Pointing out a finger all the time, fault finding, is not one of the qualities of Godhood. Godlike nature, as the 16th chapter points out. The whole point is, we are all the time, you see, having low level thoughts pertaining to personality. With the result, we can't move higher, fly, soar higher. The moment we are able to break the shell and then try to see, yes, we can control every thought and feeling and see the master within. Then one more thing that comes in this, this unity. Unity is most important here. That is, we should work like five fingers in one hand. I mean, there are 12 rules given there. There's no time for me to read that. There is clearly indicated how all the core disciples should be attuned to the heart and mind of the one living soul, the master soul, Alaya. Lives the lit as its ray in thee. Then, finally, dharma. What is dharma? You see, the whole thing is what happened to Arjuna in his first chapter. All the associations he has made earlier in all the previous births, you see, like attachment to his kith and kin, to his acharya, to other people, they come and crowd. Through this elementalism only. That is why, yes, in spite of the fact that he had taken the great avatar as himself, as a charioteer, he could not see. He could not, you see, the whole process is, this body has been obtained through karma. Where dharma has to be established. This dharma, where how can you establish it? Unless you take hold of that, yes, abide by the instruction given by the warrior within, who is incapable of defeat. Therefore, unfortunately, we fail to notice. And this he realizes the folly, that because he is thinking he is separate from Krishna. Only the 18th chapter, where he says, yes, I will act according to thy will. Totally says, although Krishna says, act as best as you can see. See, there is no force from anybody. It's up to us. We have to fight out the field and conquer the battle. It's a fight between the living and the dead, between the lower self and the higher self. Higher self has to finally conquer. Now in all this, there are some other points that come to my mind. You see, when you are able to consecrate your body and make it into a temple of the living God, then what happens? You should be able to sense the holy light of the master within. The greatest master is your own Atma, the higher self. Says the voice of his silence. Now you see, when you are able to, if you can't sense the holy light of the master within you, then what happens is, you can, as H.V. points out, yes, by purifying yourself, even now, rekindle the spark of Tathagata light in you.
Then how do you do it? H.P. points out in one place, by being all the time in association with them. In what sense? With them is the great master, their teachings. By studying their teachings, by promulgating them, by associating all the time with them, then what happens? This is transformed into a sushupti condition. We can see visions, those visions which can make your life richer and radiant. This happens. See, when have you seen an enlightened sage, how radiant his face is? Whence the radiance? Because he is able to recognize the holy light shining within him all the time. And that is why I think it is also there near on page 8. What does it say? Seek for him who is to give thee birth in the hall of wisdom, the hall which lies beyond, wherein all shadows are unknown, and where the light of truth shines with unfading glory. What is that hall of wisdom? It's truth. That's where we can seek birth. But the next passage says, you see, that which is uncreated abides in thee as it abides in that hall. What is that? Your higher nature. Therefore, what happens? There is a need for you to recognize this and constantly keep in touch with the master's message and try to blend. Yes, what is that that stands in the way? It says here on page 8, if thou wouldst reach it and blend the two, that is, unless you realize there is no difference between that light within you and what you have got in your sushupti. That, see, this has to be understood. Then, he says, yes, you will be able to activate the buddhic condition. The kundalini shakti, activate the buddhic condition. The chief cause of sushupti, says the glossary. Activating buddhi is the chief cause of sushupti, says the glossary. But from that point of view, see, you will be able to derive every day the experiences you have of the higher God within you. Then you know the master within you is all the time there to help you, to guide you. Provide, and that is why we have the two quotations from the masters. You see, that if you take one step, they will take one step towards you. We can force even a master to accept you. But if you have to take the first step, and the time is up, unfortunately, we are unable to cover all the things. Anyway, I'll end this. The process of self-purification is not work of a moment, nor of a few months, but of years. Please note that. It's not for one day or 2 days or daily 1 hour, no. See, not of a few months, but of a years. Not extending over a series of lives. In one place, H.P. says, if you are not prepared to do all these things, then at least keep the mental luggage ready. She says, the later a man begins living the higher life, the longer must be his period of probation, for he has to undo the effects of a long number of years spent in objects diametrically opposed to the real goal. We have been wasting our time all the years. Why all our past incarnations? The more strenuous one's efforts, the brighter the result of his work, the nearer he comes to the threshold. We have about 3-4 minutes to question. Sorry. This is a very inspiring subject, you see, I tell you that. There are many articles in Rajagaur occultism which relate to the chalashi. I have only quoted a few. Patience, is it? What exactly is that? I didn't.
How does one know whether one is being patient or one is slow on the path?
Slow.
How do you make out that you are actually
Let's not worry about it. Let us take the steps. You see, and then, you see, suppose a good gardener, you see, if he plants a seed, and then is he going to dig up every day to find out it's growing or not? Given good manure, good sunlight and water, then fullness of time will blossom forth. Therefore, if we have to keep on trying, never relax your effort. Then you keep on trying and one day probably you will know. See, whole point is there is no use. See, look here. If you want to find out whether progressing or too slow and all that, see, you'll be all the time worried. Whether doubt itself will come, whether I'm walking the right path or not. See, it may take a lot of time, maybe several incarnation also. The whole problem is, you see, we should not worry about that. Let us try honestly to control our lower tendencies. Try to walk the path. Sleep. And then try to understand the various qualifications, why they are given. These are all, see, things which can actually direct your mind in the right kind of direction. There are a couple of things, you see, mentioned in the quotation, this the leaflet, where he talks about you have to become in heart and mind a jailer. And then the moment something enters you, oh, I know much more than other people, if you want to play the guru or lead the guru, finished here. All these subtle things enter your mind without your knowing. You have to be all the time alert, be alert of what thoughts that enter your mind without your knowledge, subconscious. But every time you have to be very alert and positive and take real steps. It may be very, very difficult. It may take several months, several days of self-purification. But yes, once you are sure, yes, I am what? If you are convinced of the message and the messenger, then everything will go right. See, the whole point is, one of the qualifications is absolute reliance in the law. You do your best and leave everything to the karma. See, in fact, this esoteric knowledge is given only to those people who have nothing to find fault. Anusuyave, unto thee findeth fault, no fault. This sacred, secret knowledge, kingly science will be given. Easy to perform, not opposed to sacred law. Easy to be comprehensible, all these things are given. Why? See, you have reached a stage, yes, everything happens according to the law, let me leave the results of the law. Let me make an honest attempt. Maybe our trial, whatever we are trying is not enough. But you will know. Therefore, it's no use talking about, you see, whether we are going slow or steadily and all that. Then we will close this. Unfortunately, there is no time. The last quotation is a beautiful quotation. It comforts our mind and heart. Accept any man as a chela does not depend upon my personal will. It can only be the result of one's personal merit and exertion in that direction. Force anyone of the masters you may happen to choose. Do good works in his name. And for the love of mankind, be sure and resolute in the path of righteousness. Be honest and unselfish. See, look at every word. You have to meditate upon that, reflect what it says. It's not Achyuti's words, it's Master's words. But what place? We assimilate these words, he says. Forget yourself, but remember the good of other people. There, and you will have forced the Master to accept you. See, it's in our hands. Thank you.